Hi everyone, my name's Kathy and I am an addict.
Hello Kathy. I'm
really nervous. And I know there's I know that there's no real reason for me to be nervous. I know that this is a safe and kind place for me. And I've learned that from my experience over years. And I've taken responsibility as well. I've played my part in, you know, I'm an addict in recovery, pushing the edges in recovery with people in recovery. And I've also taken my part for my responsibility in my relationships, in the fellowship, to keep it a safe place. It's progress, not perfection. First of all, I'd like to thank Magda and Penny for helping me to be of service today. And just now, as we were reading the traditions, and I was thinking, yeah, that's what this is. I'm being of service. It's not, and it's not showtime. And because for me, you know, the places that I come from, showtime is one of my defences. You know, I'm one of those confusing addicts that there are times when I'm being very extrovert and I use that to hide. So it's that introvert-extrovert stuff going on. So knowing that, you know, having worked the 12 steps, knowing about 12 steps and 12 traditions helps to ground me and helps me. I've learned how to live through that. But I didn't, you know, very clearly from looking at, talking about, and writing about my own experience, I very clearly did not know how to live. I didn't. You know, and although the you know, this thing, I always say this, and I'm not getting at anyone when I say this. If you don't like what you hear tonight, you can certainly come up and say to me. But you know, go to, you know, I won't bite. And I can hold my own. You know, go to another meeting and you will hear what it is you like. And if you don't like what I say at that moment, please try to keep listening, because you might hear something that is important, that either you like or is important to you. I've really had to learn how to take in being in recovery. How to let, you know, what we're talking about here, really, you know, really it is, it's how to let spirituality in. And I've forgotten what I was saying. I do that, I wander off. Yeah, I didn't know how to live. Learning it through the steps and getting some understanding of those traditions. You know, sometimes I hear in the rooms, you know, this thing, if I'd have carried on using, I'd have died. And, you know, really, very sadly, that may well be true. And many of us have lost friends whilst in recovery to this disease. It is a reality. However, I don't know that my using would have ended up with me dying from using, because I've learned I'm not God. I've also learned what I've really not, I've learned, I'm not, I've never really thought I was God. I thought I still think I can be really good at manipulating, but that's very different from being God. What I have learned about doing this step one, was that powerlessness means unpredictable. Actually, I don't know if I will die. And that's really horrible. When your using just goes on and on and on. That's, you know, that did happen to me. I call it, you know, flat line using. Very little highs, getting so used to those rock bottoms that have trap doors, you hardly even notice them. It just goes on. That's, you know, that deadening of my spirit. That's it. Yes. I was talking to Penny on the phone, and she, yeah. So what I really like about seeing in NA, this was my starting point for this share. I got that. And I do. I really like to see people that relapse coming back. So thank you very much, Jack, for your chair. It really touches me, that. And people, you know, they come back really quite quickly or keep coming to meetings while they're using. It's amazing. It's amazing how safe people can, you know, I need to qualify this because I do hear some odd things from people that are still using in the rooms and from people that aren't using. Did you hear what she said? You know, I am not saying relapse. I'm not saying use and come to meetings, and that's really okay. You know, we encourage people to come to meetings. Once you've come to meetings, come back clean. I'm not going against the words and the advice, because that's what it is, the advice of other people's experience in our beautiful basic text never fails to just blow me away. Gorgeous, that book. So my experience of relapse. And I got clean first of all in the mid 80s. And I didn't have a sponsor. I worked a few of the steps, not all of them. And I got lost. I was really frightened as well. Got a few years up, but I was really frightened. So I hadn't learnt how to live, and I hadn't learnt how to trust, and I certainly hadn't learnt the it, just the big it, the unknown it. Actually, it's all, you know, it's all right. It's all right today. I know that now. And I started using. And my... As I stopped, doing service, and as I didn't have a sponsor, my spiritual connection became eroded. You know, in the mid 80s, recovery was very different, and I knew I had to get. Well, in those days, quite often you were told you had to get religion, you know, let's have it right. We didn't really understand so much, you know, we understand and have so, you know, such a richness of recovery language now. And so I tried being a Christian. and that, actually what happened was that there's a thing called the night. God, what is it? It's the night. Anyway, it's about this long night. It's that when this fellow went in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, and he does that because he stops hearing. He stops, the connection he had with his higher power stops, and he can't hear his voice anymore. And his higher power has been his sole reason to live. And suddenly that voice, that connection isn't there. And it freaks him out. And so I was in recovery. I was doing all this praying and doing all these affirmations in the mirror and stuff like that. And suddenly the voice wasn't there. And because I didn't have a sponsor, and because I wasn't working the steps, and because I didn't trust anyone, there wasn't anything else. So I was alone. I remember afterwards what it's called. And so I had no alternative but to use. Why wouldn't I? And whilst, so I started using, and I stopped going to meetings. I remember someone saying to me, but just before I stopped coming to meetings, I was in London, and this fella came up to me at the Rathbone Place meeting, and he said to me, do you want to go into treatment? I said no. But I said, I don't need to do that, I'll be all right. You know, that spiritual erosion, I wasn't able to accept help. Like someone just coming up and saying, I can help you, I can get you clean again, I can get you into a bed. You know, a sane person would say, oh yes, please, I'll have some of that. I wasn't sane, and I didn't know that I was no longer sane. And that's the danger of relapse in recovery. If you keep on and don't accept help, you can be eroded so much that you don't come back. And it took me 17 years to get back. And I had, you know, that flat line using. That was 17 years of flat line using. It wasn't wonderful. Sometimes I hear people, only a couple of times, mostly I don't hear this, but a couple of times I've heard people saying that they went out and they used and it did what it said on the packet, it was good. I think, oh, you poor sausage. Do you know what I mean? You poor little love. You're going to have to dig deep to find a bit of hope. So eventually, so what I did, and I've heard this in recovery as well, Mickey B, and he talked about, you know, he said, oh, I need to mention my clean time. I heard someone saying, I always mention my clean time. So I'm 12 years in my 13th year clean, and I'm really, really proud of that. There's not many of us that get clean and stay clean. Secondly, there's not many addicts like me, and I was so determined to use. And thirdly, it's plenty of time, I will talk about this. You know, recovery, life in recovery hasn't been a bed of roses, and I love recovery. There's been, whatever's happened to me in recovery, there's not been a moment that I've thought, oh, using would help this. You know, because I've written about my using. I really know it doesn't help. I've known it doesn't even numb anymore. You know what Mickey Bush talks about? Got myself back. What Mickey Bush talks about is the surrender before the surrender. When we, you know, those of us that you're really lucky if you do this, and you surrender whilst you're still using. And you're running about, you're trying to use, you're in your flat, you know, whatever it is, doing your using, and you know, you're crying out. You know, your mind and your body and your behaviours are crying out, this ain't working. I had so many plans. I was always able to look up my sleeve and pull a card out, pull a little trick out, pull a little wish, pull a little something out. And I'd pin all my hopes on that something. And each time I did it, that card, you know, that little thing I'd pull out was lower than the last time. And I never got up. I never even met the expectations and the plans that I had this time, let alone got up to the ones that I'd had before. And I was in my flat and I knew it. I knew all of it. I was terrified. You know, my higher power, the drugs, had abandoned me. I didn't think they'd ever abandon me, not like that. I thought I'd find something that would work. That veil of denial, it never occurred to me that that would be lifted. Oh, I was so shocked when I came into recovery. And so I fought to get into detox. And because I was signed away on prescription drugs and that. Yeah, I was just like, oh, park her up, she'll be all right. And my son had been with me all the time. And I say about that, you know, about how tragic this disease is. I'm just writing an 11th step at the moment, and that 12 step stuff. And never, I urge. I mean, we get advice about how to 12 step, but sometimes, you know, with step 11 and step 12, sometimes it will come on to you, and you'll just think, "Fuck me, I need sorry." But you do, don't you? You see someone, you know, on the bus, on the tube, you're walking along, you know, that route you take for work, and you keep seeing that person, you just feel, I've just got to do something. And part of that, you know, I've got to do something, is that we know how tragic using is. And the other part is, our spirit must be satisfied. Must be satisfied. It's one of the lovely things about, you know, in recovery. You know, we get ideas and we learn these skills, we go down a little path of life for a little bit because our spirit must be satisfied. And it can be really wrong. You know, that little path can take. That's happened to me in recovery. Oh, you know, I've worked the steps a few times. But, you know, I've found out, you know, how I cling. Oh, you know, God love me. You know, how I cling on to a role. How I cling on to. It just sounds really. I've got a really funny image in my mind now. You know, I tried. I was gonna say, just leave it at that. I tried being a drugs worker in recovery. When I was using, I was a drugs worker. And I was employed, because in those days, I'm so ancient, this used to happen, that you could be employed as a using drugs worker. So I was out and using in the NHS. And it's, oh, You know, so that battle coming into, you know, 12-step abstinence, flag waver, you know, for manageable using. I love it. You know, whatever our personal beliefs or our story or our experience has been before recovery, we can come into recovery, and each, it says in our literature, says in the 12 traditions, each recovery is individual. Your recovery does not have to be exactly the same as someone else's. In fact, if it is, you might want to look at that. As it says in our step, you know, it's all that, all the business of doing the writing, you know, that 12, that green and gold 12-step writing guide. And there's other NA 12-step literature as well. You know, there's the NA Step 4 little pamphlet that's been around donkey's years. But we do the writing, so it is this is individually tailored just to us, just to me. My step work and my recovery has been tailored just for me. I'm thinking of a really lovely, like, silk, soft, cushiony bed that I can just, it's my recovery, you know? And I've done that, you know, in recovery, time's going. In recovery, you know, when it gets hard, you know, and that's what I collapse, that's what I fall onto. Recovery. Right, so the difficulties. I fell in love in recovery. And, yeah, I'll talk about both. All right, so I fell in love, the first time I fell in love in recovery, because I don't have a problem with love. I can fall in love just like that, and there's nothing wrong with love. You know, it's learning how to live that I've had to do. There's nothing wrong with love. Love is lovely. I just have a few strange disorders that I attach to the love. So glad you relate. So I fell in love, and there's all that stuff about, you know, being a year clean. And I know, you know, drugs worker here, I know where that, because I know about the history of NA. Oh, yes, I made sure I found out about that. And, yes, it's very good to keep you safe. And I won't go into where that comes from now. However, so I was 8 months clean. And this fella, he hunted me down. He saw me in a meeting and he started hunting me down, which I thought was, oh, I didn't find out till afterwards that he was hunting me, but I just feel so, you know, that someone likes you so much that they hunt you. I just think, you know, of course I just think, oh, it must be right. And so he asked me when that moment came, he said, you know, how clean are you? So I raised mine a whole month and said 9 months, you know, because I thought 9 months was a real lot. And he lowered his and said a year. He was 18 months, you know, as if months matter. And months do matter, but life happens. And we were very, it was lovely. It was lovely. And he developed cancer, and you know, he was very active in the fellowship. I remember Ozzy Annie saying, you know, he was a big part of NA, and he's in recovering, he developed cancer and he passed away. And, you know, after a few years, we'd been together a few years. And NA, you know, NA gathered around me and supported me. And NA also gathered around him and supported him. And we had our own support networks that did that. You know, there's enough for both of us. Didn't have to share the support. Didn't have to share the love. There's enough. And got through that. Of course, I didn't use. Very quickly, on this one, before I go back to some other stuff, I do it, so I need to share this. Okay. The last time I did the long chair at Trafalgar Square, right at the end, I shared about my then current partner. And it's lovely. There's nothing wrong. That was my last words. 3 days later, he dumped me. And one of the things I was really taken, you know, once I'd come to, one of the things I was really taken aback about was, but I've just said it on recording. You know, when NA is your life. Right. And then we got back together again, as you do in recovery. And then we split up again. It's been a few months, and I know that we will be closer friends again in the future, because for both of us, fellowship must come first. You know, human vanity and frivolity. No relationship that I've had, no relationship that I've had in recovery has been worth putting in front of recovery, in front of fellowship. Just ain't been that important. You know, what we do here is, the way we have of living here is beautiful. It's so much more than a relationship of two people. It's just this. So I can do it. I said I was going to aim for 15:15, but so I've got a few more minutes. Also, so my son, he was always with me throughout me using. Then I went and detoxed, and that was really traumatic for him. Really traumatic for me. 16 years old, and mum's just not there, and social services didn't put anything in place. He was at school. He was in, we still live there, in an East London, council estate, and word very quickly went round. I was a 16-year-old with a flat. And it broke his heart that he couldn't hold it together. It broke his heart that he couldn't protect the home. You know, his little man heart. I'm only allowed to talk about him like that here. He's a big man. He's 29 now. It was difficult for him. So I came out. And he loved me being in recovery. He used to push me out the door to a meeting, you know, if I was worried. Lots of stuff went on. And eventually I made him homeless. I asked him to leave the flat whilst I was in recovery. And because sometimes in recovery, right, the point of this story is, sometimes in recovery, I've asked for advice, and I've taken that advice. A few years down the line, I wish I hadn't. It's a wish. It don't matter. Because as long as I stay, what I've found is that as long as I stay in recovery, it will be all right. Whatever it is, I may be powerless over the outcome, but I'll be all right. As long as I stay in recovery, as long as I don't pick up. And if I'm all right, then I'm going to be fit and ready to love. And I'll be fit and ready to let the love in. I'll be fit and ready to take responsibility when I can. So, and when I made him homeless, it was the easiest flipping homeless I've ever come across. You know, he was already involved with the mental health team, so I gave him a letter with the date saying, my son's, you know, I've had to kick him out of the home, he's now homeless, he's in touch with the early intervention team. Went along to the homeless persons unit and got a council flat that day. It's the easiest street homeless over here, do you know what I mean? Don't know, he doesn't know he's born. Anyway, so, and then after a couple of years of that, and he was like me, he doesn't know how to live. And after a couple of years of that, before he came home, I'd gone through the steps again, been through the steps quite a few times, and I made a decision. I worked steps 1, 2, and 3 around him, and I made a decision that if ever he came back, I would not let go of him again. Not for anything, not for any of my reasons. If he decides, that's fine, because I respect him. I made that decision that me and my higher power would be in that flat and would be with him. And I, you know, that spiritual principle of assertiveness wouldn't get to the point where I said, no, you've got to go, because I'd be assertive. I knew I could. Thank you. So he's come back. And that's just a continuing story. Because it's all right, because I love him. And please, 3 days from now, do not dump me, son. He's all right. My life's okay. What have I got in recovery? I've got self-worth, I've got self-esteem. When I first came into recovery, I couldn't string 2 sentences together. You know, I really couldn't. In the detox, they thought they might have to get an ambulance for me to either because of physical collapse or because of a mental collapse, and I'd have to be taken off. I'm self-supporting. I support other people. I was working out, I weigh about a third more of my whole self than I did when I first came into recovery. I eat well. I do eat well. I found my own spirituality. I'm a bit of a Buddhist. And even that, you know, with my local Buddhists, I've had to do it my own way. In work, I've had to do it my own way. And I've been able to, you know, without hurting myself or others. That's the main thing. I live, apart from the ex, I live without harm. I still have to do step work around him. Thank you, guys.